Your family is powerful in its own right, but only in the Seswena. Outland forces will soon have the Sector's pirate pests on the run, and what will you do then? His eyes narrowed once more. There are larger fights to wage, Cadet. When you graduate, why not visit me on Coruscant? I will be your guide to the Senate District, and with any luck, I'll be able to change your mind about politics as a career. Unlike Coruscant, Iriadu hasn't been corrupted by greed and the welter of contradictory voices. It has always been a Tarkan world, and it could become a beacon for other worlds wishing to be recognized by the galactic community. You could be the one to bring that about. As it happened, Tarkan wouldn't enter politics for many years, though he did accept Palpatine's help in gaining admission to the Judicial Academy. There, and precisely as the senator from Naboo had predicted, his fellow cadets had initially viewed him as a kind of noble savage, a principled being with abundant energy and drive who had the misfortune of hailing from an uncivilized world. In part, Tarkin's father and the top echelon of the Outland region's security force were to blame. Eager to impress the Corps with their achievements and the fact that they were willing to contribute one of their finest strategists to the Republic, Outland's leaders had personally delivered Tarkan to the Academy in one of its finest warships, its glossy hull emblazoned with the symbol of the Fanged Viamok, and Tarkan himself turned out in the full regalia of an Outland commander. His arrival caused such a stir that the Academy's provost marshal had mistaken him for a visiting dignitary, which, while certainly the case on worlds throughout the embattled Seswena sector, carried no weight in the Corps. Were it not for Palpatine's influence once more, Tarkan might have been dismissed from the Academy even before he had been enrolled as a plebe. Tarkan understood that he had neglected to heed the lessons he had learnt at Sullust and had committed a tactical blunder of the worst sort. Both on the Carrion Plateau and in Iriadu space, he had grown so accustomed to flying boldly into confrontation and announcing himself with flourish and dash that he hadn't stopped to consider the staid nature of his new testing ground. Instead of sowing chaos of the sort that had so often served his purposes on land and in deep space, he had succeeded only in rousing the instant scorn of his instructors and the ridicule of his fellow plebes, who took every chance to refer to him as commander, or to offer facetious salutes when and wherever possible. Early on, the derisive teasing led to brawls, which he mostly won, and also to disciplinary action and demerits that sentenced him to remain at the bottom of the class. That a plebe could be expelled from the judicials for standing up for himself was something of a revelation, and perhaps he should have seen it as emblematic of the stance the Republic itself would adopt in the coming years, when its authority would be challenged by the Separatists. But he couldn't keep himself from answering fire with fire. Gradually he came to suffer the mockery of his peers without resorting to retribution, though demerits would continue to accrue owing to mischief-making and impulsive outbursts. Even so, he refused to allow himself to be cut down to size, choosing instead to bide his time and wait for an opportunity to show his peers just what he was made of. Halcyon would prove to be that opportunity. A Republic member world located in the colonies region, Halcyon was suffering a crisis of its own. A cold-blooded group of would-be usurpers, clamoring for the planet's right to manage its own affairs, had abducted several members of the planetary leadership and was holding them hostage at a remote bastion. After attempts at negotiation had been exhausted, the Republic Senate had granted permission for the Jedi to intervene and, if necessary, to employ lightsaber diplomacy to resolve the crisis. Tarkan was chosen to be one of the 80 judicials the Senate ordered to attend and reinforce the Jedi. Never having seen, let alone served alongside a Jedi, he was fascinated from the start. His theoretical grasp of the Force was as keen as that of most of his Academy peers, but he was less interested in furthering his understanding of metaphysics than in observing the aloof Jedi in action. How adept were they at tactics and strategy? How quick were they to wield their lightsabers when their commands fell on deaf ears? How far were they willing to go to uphold the authority of the Republic? As a self-considered expert in the use of the Vibro-Lance, Tarkan was equally captivated by their lightsaber skills. Watching them train during the journey to Halcyon, he saw that each had an individual fighting style, and that the techniques for attacks and parries seem unrelated to the color of the energy blades. At Halcyon, the Jedi divided the judicials into four teams, assigning one to accompany them to the fortress, and inserting the others on the far side of a ridge of low mountains to block possible escape routes. While Tarkin saw a certain logic in the plan, he couldn't quite purge himself of a suspicion that the Jedi merely wanted to rid themselves of responsibility for law enforcement personnel they clearly thought of as inferiors. What the Jedi hadn't taken into account was the fact that Halcyon's usurpers were a tech-savvy group who had had ample time to prepare for an assault on the Bastion. No sooner were the judicial teams inserted into the densely forested foothills than the planet's global positioning satellites were disabled and surface-to-air communications scrambled. In short order, Tarkin's team lost touch with the two cruisers that had brought them to Halcyon, their Jedi commanders, and the other judicial teams. The prudent response would have been to hunker down while the Jedi attended to business at the fortress and wait for extraction. But the team's commander, a by-the-numbers human with 20 years of judicial service whose piloting and martial skills had earned him Tarkin's reluctant respect, had other ideas. Convinced that the Jedi too had fallen prey to a trap, he got it in his head to strike out overland, traverse the ridge, and open a second front on reaching the fortress. But this struck Tarkin as pure arrogance, no different from what he had seen in some of the Jedi he had come to know. But he also realized that the commander likely couldn't abide being stranded in a trackless wilderness with a group of raw trainees. Tarkin was immediately aware of the potential for disaster. The commander's datapad contained regional maps, but Tarkin knew from long experience that maps weren't the territory, and that triple canopy forests could be confounding places to negotiate. At the same time, he realized that the opportunity for finally proving his worth couldn't have been more made to order if he had designed it himself. Mission briefings had acquainted him with the local topography, and he was reasonably certain he could follow his nose almost directly to the Bastion, but he decided to keep that to himself. For 3 days of foul weather, mudslides and sudden tree falls, the commander had them stumbling through thick forest and bogs, occasionally circling...